the monkey can climb. No more he shows his tail. Call no man happy till he dies. There's no milk at the bottom of the pail. God builds a church, the devil builds a chapel, like the thistles that are growing on the trunk of a tree. All the good in the world you can put inside a thimble and still have room for you and me. If there's one thing you can say about mankind, there's nothing kind about man. You can drive out nature with a pitchfork, but it always comes roaring back again. Misery's the river of the world. Misery's the river of the world. Misery's the river of the world.
Anaxagoras 13. Dr. Rand's voice in the hall of the Tyrannosaurus was made large by resonance in its enormous emptiness. And if he bumped the podium or struck it with a fist for effect, the sound boomed across the space. This gave the whole of the show a majesty and a folly of equal measure, which Edith delighted in. And her delight so annoyed Rand that he progressively exaggerated the melodrama of it, in order to intimidate her, I suppose. But Edith found it the more hilarious. She was polite enough, however. She rarely laughed in his face. But more than once I saw tears in her eyes for the suppressed laughter. Rand, however, took the tears to be deserved guilty pain that he had caused, and was smug and pleased with himself for causing it. What a horrid turd. Excuse my emotion. He began methodically. He generalized and pontificated about Dr. Casey. He portrayed her character, her demeanor, her thought, her attitude, her deeds, to represent such an arrogant, undisciplined, and intemperate mind, willful and unrepentant in unprincipled breaches of trust and decency, so foully abusive of authority and privilege for eccentric, perverse pursuits, so dishonest, licentious, and miscreant, that the university and its students must be protected from such a person. Or surely the university shall be compromised and condone these maledictions perforce, to promote by its own venerated agency such loathsome character, demeanor, thought, attitude, and deeds. And wherefore shall our university and our nation come to be, if this be so? It was not clear to me, nor known to the chair, what the practicum for these proceedings were. If there were bylaws and protocols for these proceedings, they were lost in the misty shoals of time long ago, whence none living with memory knew where they were to be found or how they were to be done. Rand might have bullied others, but not Edith, who simply spoke when she wished to speak and declared recesses according to her own physiology, asking politely to be excused when necessary, and returning with a polite apology for any inconvenience she may have caused. She never took offense of anything that she heard from Rand or others, and did not intend offense in her replies, and she carefully measured her words. She never raised her voice. She never interrupted the presenter. She was patient to speak after he finished, and she spoke calmly, even when he interrupted her. Certainly, Edith was not supposed to reply to his peroration. At least, it should be surmised by his apparent confusion and indignant huffing. But after the solemn and ceremonial presentation of a written copy of his text to the chair, delivered by his gesture at the hands of his minion, Edith, smiling, nodding at the chair, stood, and looking pleasantly upon her accuser, said simply, "Are you finished, Andrew?" Rand scowled and made to object to her, but Edith calmly raised a hand and continued because he was speechless. "I think you make some excellent arguments. A person such as you have described should not be teaching here. Do you mean to say that I am this person?" "Madam, you should sit," said Rand. "I think not," Edith continued. "At any rate, I think we should address the particulars, Andrew, for if it is facts that you intend to submit, you have presented none so far." She sat, smoothing her skirt, looking attentively at him. He made a little cough, an awkward outburst, almost like a laugh, but put his hand to his mouth to cover it. Winslow turned to look at him with some concern. Rand then began to itemize the bill of accusations as represented in the official notice of November 27th, the letter from the chair which I had seen, in which allegations were enumerated, for which cause she was to be disciplined. The first of these allegations were certain shortcomings in the performance of her academic duties, to wit, poor teaching, absence from classes, absence from faculty meetings, low enrollment in her classes. Such allegations were evidently boilerplate for tenure trials and had been included out of form, it seems. The evidence presented was paltry, I must say. I should have thought that cooking up a case for the better part of 6 months, as I understood from Winslow that he and she had been working this up since last May, they would have got better stuff. And indeed, they used my own foolish contributions for more than they were worth. The allegations of poor teaching consisted of miscellany from previously adjudicated student complaints, culled for the sensational effect of the appearance that an item might give in its leering example, if spoken in the raw words of the complainant, with disapprobation and a presumption that they may be true. Of course, such complaints of such students, all of us shall receive, an overflowing waste bin of them in a lifetime of teaching. But Edith had only a few. If we, each of us fellow professors, were to be judged by such complaints, then the entire university shall be certainly stocked with pettifogs and brutes. Rand read some of these aloud, verbatim, in a tone of shocked conscience. It should have been embarrassing, even for him, I should think. They were so absurd on their face, and often ungrammatical, if not to say illiterate. After Rand put down the last item with a gesture of disgust, Edith replied simply by asking the chair whether these were new complaints. The chair had to confess that, no, they had been previously disposed of by other administrative processes, and no, they had not been actionable. Dr. Rand interrupted her even as her words were in her mouth to explain that it was irrelevant that they had been dismissed. They were part of a chain of evidence, revealing an emergent pattern that we must understand as a whole, and we should not be fixed upon any individual issue. Rather, it was the purport and implication of their collectivity on which findings of facts ought to be made by the oral or penumbral effect of them, as it were, so to reveal the conspiracy of intent and significance, the whole being greater and more important than any detail of any single item. The room was silent when Rand, flushed with his excitement, concluded. Edith smiled at him. Then strangely, Rand laughed, or coughed, or barked, whatever that strange sound was, which he had before he made again. Again covering his mouth, seeming to choke, touching his throat, clearing it. Winslow looked at him with affectionate concern and returned a gaze of cold scorn upon Edith, who also seemed a bit worried for Rand. I myself should not have regretted that he choked to death on his own nasty spit. One of the obsequious little squeaks there to assist the great man scrabbled up and put some papers forward toward his hands, as a scalpel is offered to a surgeon, and he proceeded with the prosecution, the presentation of facts. The allegation of absences from class consisted entirely of the report of playing hooky last May Day, as I have quoted for you from her journal entry. The allegation of not attending a faculty meeting consisted of her failure to attend a summons to a recent ad hoc committee called by Winslow, which self-named Committee for America had declared on behalf of the university, unofficially, in support of our troops in Vietnam and its condemnation of the riotous protesters. The allegation of low enrollment in classes concerned a class which had been created by and assigned to RAND last spring semester, but because of an episode of illness had been reassigned to Dr. Casey, who had volunteered for the duty. Although she was overloaded with her own classes and her research, as a result of low enrollment, the class had been dropped from curriculum, and RAND blamed Casey for this. When RAND had finished, again arguing it was not the verity of the specifics that mattered, but their significance when taken together, the complicity of their meaning, he looked at the chair and wondered if it were not time to take lunch. I thought it also a subterfuge to deny Edith a rebuttal, but really, considering what had been presented, no rebuttal should be necessary. Of course, I did not know the turn of minds which had already occurred. None of this evidence was new to anyone except me. Its inferences had already passed from implications to considered judgments among my peers. At any rate, Edith did not object when the chair said that it was quite enough for the day, and we should be in recess until tomorrow morning. True to the curse put upon me, I had to watch Edith leave without being able to offer her a show of my affection. Winslow invited the finders of fact for drinks at her house. I declined, politely but icily. The chair, to her credit, also declined. I went to my own home to drink alone and despondently read some poetry. I could understand Edith's resignation, but it rankled me that Rand should win. A few drinks, and I felt better, and the poetry swam like fish in my fish tank brain, and soon the bright bubbles fizzing off my gently percolating aerator softly soothed my mind tank in burbling blessed stupor. Thank God for our holy medicines. The following day, the presenter of fact was eager to begin, and we had assembled early at his urging, and once again should stage an entrance for Edith, but Edith was late. Rand, agitated and angry, vented a sigh to the chair, and when seeing Edith finally arriving, hustled us to our chairs and took the podium, only to be left standing for another 15 minutes, while Edith excused herself for a necessary. Rand coughed, or barked, if you will, when the double door finally opened and Edith came smiling to sit on her chair, apologizing for keeping them waiting and assuring them that next time they may proceed without her if they wish, saying that she would not be offended and understood how precious time is to all of us. The chair thanked her and said it was no problem, but she for one would certainly like to get this over with. She said this most sincerely. And Edith, sensing that sincerity, replied, "Yes, I understand." Rand said that it was now his onerous duty to present unsavory facts concerning unprofessional conduct, conduct concerning matters of moral behavior, shocking behavior which is and ought to be held private. Oh, would that the matter could be hid from our view. And so perhaps should not concern the university, even if the notoriety should damage the reputation and good standing of its institution in the community, but it was too grievous and too injurious in its kind, and was otherwise necessary to this presentation because the facts involve university students, some of whom were minors, some of whom were graduate students whose academic standing should be adversely prejudiced by such impropriety, and that Dr. Casey, acting as indecorous mentor to these innocents, abetted and encouraged illicit behaviors which thus wounded these youths and scandalized the university. I admired his elaborate syntax and his decorous diction. He said he must ask first that Dr. Winslow be asked to testify. Anticipating an objection, which Edith did not make, he would inoculate the propriety of the testimony by acknowledging that he recognized it may seem improper for one to testify who is also a finder of fact, but he had no doubt of her fair-mindedness, and that Dr. Hawthorne of Kerse was certainly partial and fond of Dr. Casey for his part, and maybe considered her friend, but that he did not doubt his integrity or fair-mindedness. And so we should allow that both of these persons, in their professional capacities, should be expected to tell and to find the truth without prejudice, faithful to their intellects and conscience. Again, I felt some genuine awe for the turd. He had connived to ask me to participate not because I should prove the fool, as I felt I was, but because he could therefore place his wife on the same panel without censure. A sublime, a glistening, a tumescent turd, if ever there was one. Dr. Winslow stood to testify from where she sat, but faced Dr. Rand to answer his queries erect, attentive, solicitous. He led her as a witness. She did ramble. She told then first the incident at the Committee on Student Affairs, how Edith had defended obscene dress, unseemly attire for our young ladies that revealed their bosom shamefully, how she had browbeat the committee to her foreign opinion, how she had not a doubt for the European customs of which Edith spoke, not that wearing underwear was de rigueur among sophisticates in those nations, but in America it abridged common decency among normal people. Feeling heated and indignant, she then resisted Rand's leash and looked upon her fellow fact-finders for sympathy, as she related that subsequently Dr. Casey attacked her with invective in the halls of the department itself, in the presence of her peers, and while she, Winslow, endeavored to calm her, Casey was wroth, intemperate, and obscene, and used some language that only men should use among men, and that no decent man should ever use such language before a woman, let alone that a woman should use it. She was shocked and hurt, she said. Hurt not for herself, she said, but for the damaged decorum of the department and the gentle sensibilities of the witnesses who had to endure her disgusting display. Some of my fellow finders, I observed, were discomfited by this evidence, but others I saw were looking down upon Edith with pursed lips, and evidently believed every word of the matter. Dr. Rand thanked his wife, taking her hand and stroking it to calm her, as Winslow was somewhat in a lather like a good horse after a good run, and he took her, champing to tell more, back to her station to rejoin us. He looked at Edith as he let go of his wife's hands as she sat down, and paused to sigh and shake his head before he returned to the podium, clutched his edge, and declared that, of course, it's not the facts as they stand, but how, quote, you must see these facts coalesce, how they suggest a mind, a person, a character that might do such things, that harbor such thoughts. And this is now what I must reveal. I'm sorry to do this. I am sorry, not for this woman, pointing at Edith, but for those who were her victims. The double doors of the hall were swung open and held apart by a pair of Rand's impeccable female minion. And between the doors, two more of Rand's faithful came forth escorting Mock Turtle, dressed as much the same as they, even to the high heels, which must be the savoir-vivre of young female fascists, the rat-a-tat-tat of the glittering heels, so much like the chopping bullets of a fashionable automatic weapon. Edith, for a moment, did look apprehensive, but while others of my peers may have interpreted this as a pang of guilt, I understood it for the empathy to Mock Turtle. I knew enough about the matter, having known her during the period as well as having read the journals, to understand Edith's concerns. Of course, my peers should know none of this. A chair had been presented, unfolded for Mock Turtle, so that she may sit at the end of the proscenium from which Rand loomed from his podium, looking down at her, her hands folded upon her lap. Flanked by two high-heeled minions, she looked up at him. He smiled kindly upon them all. He said that, as he had told her previously, this was not a trial, but a hearing to find the facts. Nothing that she will say shall be reflected in her personal student record, and she would be identified in the official transcripts simply as a student. She should tell her story truthfully, as she had told it to him, without fear of any recrimination or adverse consequence to her. "All of it?" she asked him meekly. "Just start from the beginning," Rand told her sympathetically. Mock Turtle, then, taking him at his word, began with the unsolicited survey she received from the Student Affairs Office of the university, which she took to be an official matter that required her response, that she had felt the inquiry invasive and inappropriate, but felt obliged to complete it. "Were you not advised it was voluntary?" "No," she said, "and I thought it strange that the university would ask me about my prayers. But that is what she, looking at Edith, wanted to know about. How, when I pray, I sometimes feel myself coming to God. I answered the survey as truthfully as I could, and then I received a personal letter asking me to join her in some research."
"And did you accept this invitation?"
"I thought I had no choice. It was strange because my two roommates had also received letters. We were all surprised. We supposed that it was required of us."
"And what happened then?"
"We met Dr. Casey and Mr. Nussbaum."
"That would be Howard Nussbaum, her graduate assistant?"
"Yes. We met them, all of us, perhaps 7 or 8 of us."
"Other students?"
"Yes. We met them, and they explained the research, and I think they showed us the laboratory, or, no, maybe that was later. Anyway, I remember how Dr. Casey said she was doing this experiment to test whether the soul existed. My friend Hedgehog, who shared the apartment with me, and Griffin, told her that this was not something she should do."
"How did Dr. Casey react to this?"
"She was very unhappy, and she immediately took my friend out of the room, and my friend left without a word."
"Did you talk to your friend about what happened?"
"She did not want to talk about it at first. She was afraid, I think. But after I finally left Edith's, Dr. Casey's home, I came back to live with her in the apartment, and she told me then that she thought what Dr. Casey was doing was not right, was not science, was something to do with religion and not right for a scientist to be doing, and that she had told you about it, and you had begun an investigation, and that's when I met you."
"Yes," said Dr. Rand.
"But tell us first, after you began the research, how did you come to live with Dr. Casey?"
"Well, I don't know for sure. School would be out in May, and our lease was up, and I was planning to go home, but one of the other students asked us, told us we should all come to live with Dr. Casey for that summer."
"That would be Josephine Baker, correct?"
"Yes. She lived with Dr. Casey and was one of the students in this so-called research?"
"Yes."
"Proceed."
"Well, she said we should come live with them."
"Did you think yourself free to say yes or no? I don't understand."
"Did it not seem to you that Dr. Casey insisted upon this?"
"Oh, Yes, I see what you mean. Yes, that's what I thought. That is what all of us thought. We had no choice but to do whatever she wanted. You had no choice but to do whatever she wanted, he repeated slowly for effect, looking at the describer. Is that what you said? Yes. She is a professor. We are students. I see. Rand looked at Edith severely. I understand. Tell us then about living in the house. How did that go? Did anything happen there that troubled you? Well, yes, sir. From the beginning, there was the relationship of Zoe, Josephine, with another person in the house who was not one of us, who was some friend of Dr. Casey's, I think. What about that relationship? Rand had lifted a pencil and made a note on the podium, giving the item ominous weight, poised to record her answer. They were... I don't know what it is. It is sodomy. They were engaged in lesbianism? Yes. With Dr. Casey's knowledge? Yes. And she condoned this? She said it was perfectly normal. Normal? Yes. Go on. What else happened in the house? We had nudist parties, and we smoked marijuana, and she often made us drinks and got us all drunk. How often? I don't know, several times. And you participated? Yes. Mock Turtle burst into tears of shame. I thought I had to, she sobbed. Edith said, Dr. Rand. Rand waved her off and said to Mock Turtle that he knew this was difficult for her, and she was nearly at the end of her testimony, that he had only a few more questions. Mock Turtle, raising her face toward him, wiping away tears streaming from her eyes, sniffling, said, Yes, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. You have nothing to be sorry about, my dear, he said, looking aside sternly at Edith. Then looking back at Mock Turtle, he added his reassurance, You've done nothing wrong. She nodded, quieting her sobs, settling for the last question. Tell us, my dear, the circumstance of your leaving Dr. Casey's house and her research. We were all of us forced to engage in the research over the summer. We were put in a bed in the room in Green Hall in the sub-basement where she and her assistant Mr. Nussbaum observed us from behind a mirror. They attached electrodes to us. Were you in your street clothes? We were in our underwear, and some of the girls, they only wore panties. Why? To permit the attachments of the electrodes, I said. Go on. Then they would ask me to pray like I do so that I can see God. I see. And they took measurements. Yes, said Rand. Tell us about the last time when... Yes, I was supposed to do something I did not understand. They wanted me to pray, but to pray to go someplace. I didn't understand. To go someplace? Yes, and I think they gave me a drug. She, Dr. Casey, has drugs. I think the other girls use them. I think she gave me some because when I prayed that time, I think I passed out. And then I woke up and I found myself in a room. Yes? I did not know where I was, but Mr. Nussbaum was there and maybe some other men and some of the girls, and they were doing things on the floor. What things? It was sex. They were having sex. Rand made notes. Did not need to prompt Turtle, who flushed and distressed, looked at Edith and said, They took my clothes off me and tried to make me do it too. Mock Turtle was trembling. Her eyes were distant, glassy. Rand shook his head. He turned to the chair and said, I think that you will agree that given the emotion of her testimony, we should allow her to leave, subject to recall, of course. Yes, the chair stuttered. As you wish. She looked at Edith, who nodded. The minion left with Mock Turtle, taking her by the elbows to support her out of the hall. Edith stood after an interval when the doors were shut behind them. She stood beside her chair. She looked at Rand. "Andrew, I have known you for 17 years. Nothing, not even the human vivisections that you call surgeries, disgust me more than the use you have taken of this poor sick child." Rand began to bluster. "It is you who misused this child." Edith stopped him with her hand raised. "Andrew, you know she does not speak the truth. Except as this poor sick mind perceives it, I do regret engaging her in my experiments. For that error and the harm thereby to her, I am culpable. As soon as I realized the pathology of her mind, I dismissed her, but she has resisted my efforts to deliver her to therapy. I hope you shall see she receives treatment, Madam Chair, whatever the outcome here." Edith took a breath. She looked very sad. No one said anything until Edith said, "I think we are done for the day," and turned and walked out the doors. No one spoke. Winslow's cheerful invitation for drinks to her house was met with dismayed silence. Rand and his bevy worked to collect their papers, and he gave them detailed instructions for the morrow. I held back as the other finders of fact left the hall and caught the chair as she was leaving the room. Touching her arm to gain her attention, I told her, "I think that last testimony was unfair to Edith. I know this young woman. She's not well. The things she said are not true." The chair said, "Yes, I know. I'm sure that the others understand this, but you must forgive me. I cannot discuss this matter with you. You must discuss it with them when you have the opportunity." She was not wrong. But I asked her, how should Edith defend herself against it? She shook her head, looking back at me as I held the door for her, seeing Rand over her shoulder coming toward us, and said again, "I'm sorry, I must go." Rand went by me, looking at me suspiciously, as I was left holding the door for him and his burdened minions to pass through. Looking back in the room, I imagined that a Tyrannosaurus should be festive visitor to the hall, compared to what I had just witnessed.
The higher that the monkey can climb, the more he shows his tail. Call no man happy till he dies. Like the back of his hand, the good in the world you can put inside a thimble, still have room for you and me. If there's one thing you can say about mankind, there's nothing kind about man. You can drive out nature with the pitchfork, but it always comes roaring back again. For want of a bird, the sky was lost. For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a life, the life was lost. For want of a toy, the child was lost. And misery's the river of the world. Misery's the river of the world. Everybody moan, everybody moan. Misery's the river of the world. Misery's the river of the world. Is the member of the world. Everybody vote. Everybody vote. Everybody vote.